Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
And he said on the postgame radio interview that Chris Beard has told him, as long as Penny is the coach at Memphis, Chris, like, Ole Miss is going to want to play Memphis. And, I think as long as Chris Beard is at Ole Miss, that's going to be a really, really good, not saying that it won't be a good opportunity if somebody else is a coach, but you feel pretty secure in the fact that that's a quad one, quad two opportunity every single year that you have them on the schedule with Chris Beard as coach.
All right, so we've got Josh's return on Sunday. I think this is actually kind of a test for me. Season opener, even though it wasn't like maybe the most electric crowd, but my rant on that was we should never open the season on a college football Saturday at 2 p.m. Like, I understand there are schedule and logistic issues. I'm not trying to act like that I'm the be-all, end-all. I'm just saying, can we just at least acknowledge maybe that wasn't the greatest start time?
Yep.
But now you've got a UNLV team coming in that's limping in, literally, to FedEx Forum. And, like, to me, it's almost like, all right, prove to me that this is different, because these have been oftentimes some of the games where the energy's not there. Like, that's kind of what I think is interesting about Sunday.
Yes, I agree with you. I think that is going to be a very – how they come out and you know, obviously what the result is – will be very, very telling about the DNA of this team. Because, as you said, like, all too often the last two or three years, even further back than that, Memphis does not treat games like this. They don't exactly show up the same way against, you know, in situations like this, the way they would or will against, you know, when Clemson comes to town or when Mississippi State comes to town. So, yeah, like, you know, maybe is this year different? Like, because there are so many different players on this team, like, is this team's DNA a little bit different? Like, are we finally going to see a Memphis team that comes out with their hair on fire, like, treating this game as though we want to see how many points we can score and we want to see how few we can keep, you know, how few we can hold the opponent to. Like we're not just satisfied with winning. We're not just satisfied with padding our stats. We're trying to dominate. I wonder, it's going to be interesting to see which profile shows up on Sunday.
All right, Munns, we appreciate it, my man.
All right, thank y'all.
That is Jason Munns, Tiger basketball beat writer for the Commercial Appeal. Want to remind you, it's one of the best times to get over and see our friends over at Robert Irwin Jewelers. Of course, the holidays are bearing down upon us, and right now, the famous Robert Irwin Jewelers Give Gifts and Get Gifts sale has begun. Now through Saturday, that is November the 15th, if you spend $1,999 or more on anything at Robert Irwin Jewelers, you'll receive a free Yeti Roadie 24 hard cooler, or you can take an additional 10% off already on sale diamond pendants and necklaces at Robert Irwin Jewelers. I can't say enough about the shopping experience at Robert Irwin Jewelers. If you go and see it for yourself, because while sometimes jewelry purchases can certainly feel like nerve-wracking and certainly stressful moments, they make it so easy and so comfortable. Everyone in there is so friendly. When I went in to go and buy my wife's engagement ring, I knew absolutely nothing about what I was doing other than my wife had basically sent me in with a couple of pictures of things that she wanted for her engagement ring. I went to work with Howie. We picked out the center diamond. We came in under budget, and we have a ring that my wife absolutely loves. Plus, if you do that, you can get free ring sizing for life at Robert Irwin Jewelers. Also, make sure to take advantage of the free jewelry spa service for life. My wife and I do that periodically, and you end up looking like you got brand new jewelry. But again, the Buy Gifts That Give Gifts sale has begun, and it's now through Saturday. And go take advantage of it at Robert Irwin Jewelers. Three locations. You can shop at the Bartlett Town Center in Bartlett near the Kroger, the South Haven location at the corner of Airways and Goodman Road, or the Diamond Showroom right there on South Perkins near Laurelwood. As always, you can check out all the information at rijewelers.com. Robert Irwin Jewelers, bigger, brighter diamonds, all at better prices. We come back. Let's get into the list. We haven't got into the Grizzlies yet. We've also got some Kia rookie ladder rankings. We'll tell you where Cedric Coward checks in on that latest from NBA.com. We'll do all that when we come back right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Despite losing in the semifinals of the American Conference Tournament, the Memphis Women's Tiger soccer team is headed back to the NCAA tournament. They will be a 7 seed. Lawrence Dockery of the 901 Soccer Podcast is going to join us during the next segment to preview that. But before we do any of that, let's get into the list. The Memphis Grizzlies. All right, I don't want today to be an apologist day, but George, despite the fact that the Grizzlies fell last night at Madison Square Garden 133-120 against the Knicks, I did also think there were some signs of positive movement. And I guess here's what I would say. If we want to start with the good, if you just focused on one end of the floor, particularly the offensive end, I do start to see signs of improvement. The offense doesn't look nearly as disjointed and erratic. Obviously, the turnovers were an issue, but as George will know better than anyone, when the Grizzlies play the Knicks, it is interesting how, even though Tibbs wasn't coaching, it was almost like the Knicks just told, they literally just told Mike Brown,
yeah,
hey, we got the game plan for this one. Because it felt like the exact same game plan. It's like, put somebody physical on job top,
right?
Force the ball out of his hand quickly, and see how they go from there. The turnovers were bad, and the turnovers basically tell the story. This was one of those games that you didn't even really need to watch. You could go look at the box score, and you go, all right, the Knicks got 33 points off of turnovers. The Grizzlies got 11, and that was the story. But I think where I'm starting to take some encouragement is, A, number one, things have died down. It doesn't feel like every possession is some type of indictment of where's the entire mental, you know, where are the mentals of the entire team, in particular Ja.
We're not spending the next, you know, week just reading body language like we're all, you know, psychologists.
Correct. Like body language experts on a TMZ show. So the offense, I do think, is starting to come along. It feels like guys are getting more comfortable with where guys are supposed to be, and it's looking better. Now, on the defensive end, it also feels like a tale as old as time, in which, to the untrained, idiotic eye that is mine, I just see the same thing happening again and again and again, which is somebody over-rotates, a couple extra passes are made, wide open three in the Grizzlies' eyes. Last night, the Knicks shot 55 threes and made 22 of them. This could also be another one of those situations where, all right, that's all you needed to see as well. But this was also not a game that I was going in and expecting the Grizzlies to sit there and take it down to the wire. And to me, where I guess you could say it rhymes with some of the other things, it took a little bit longer. But what we saw with the Grizzlies last night, first 10 minutes, pretty competitive.
Yeah.
Back and forth, back and forth. Now, maybe you can make the case, with the Grizzlies starting the game, shooting the basketball as well as they did, they should have gotten a few more stops and had a big lead. Instead, the Grizzlies give up a 12-0 run to close the quarter. They finish, I think the Knicks end up at one point getting it up to like a 19-0 run. And basically, they ran away and hid. The Grizzlies kind of fought back. I think the last time I even considered whether or not it'd be interesting, the Grizzlies, I think, had cut it back down to 10. They get a miss from the Knicks. They can't secure the rebound, and the ball winds up in Brunson's hands. Brunson hits the three. C'est la vie. That's the night. I'm more interested in tonight because so far what we've seen with the Grizzlies, and I think it makes sense from a personnel perspective, When the Grizzlies are going to go up against the best teams, I don't have high hopes. But the Grizzlies have beaten the bad teams. And now the question is going to be, when they go up against a team that is similar right now, because the Grizzlies coming at 4-8, I think the Celtics are 5-7.
Yes.
I think last I saw, the Grizzlies were 7-point dogs.
Yeah, and I part of that line as well is the injury update we got earlier. Yeah, right now ESPN has it at Boston -7.5. It opened at 6.5, so that isn't like crazy line movement.
Yep.
But we have Ja Morant as a game time decision. He's questionable with the ankle. I'm surprised that it's the ankle. It has looked more like it's the back that's bothering him.
Yeah.
He's always had that like heating wrap or that like compression wrap on pretty much every time he leaves the court. But
the Desmond Bay Memorial heating wrap.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Always tucking it up under the hoodie that he throws on. But I guess there was some good news in that injury report if we want to go that direction.
Let's do it.
We've got Zach Edey.
GTD?
Doubtful.
Okay, he's upgraded to doubtful, not game time decision.
No, but we know how the Grizzlies do this.
Correct.
It is always the progression of, okay, wait, if he's out, we know, obviously he's out. They have to put that in there. Doubtful. Okay, maybe not tonight, but we'll see when he goes up to questionable, and a lot of the times these guys that are questionable end up playing.
Yeah, and it would probably make sense if, hey, maybe tonight's not the night to usher him back in because we know how Boston wants to play.
Right.
But on Saturday night, they go to Cleveland.
Which,
it's kind of a toss-up where it's like, okay, well, they have two bigs, but it's almost like, do you just want to throw him into the fire in that one?
That's what I mean. Like, with Boston, you're not having him play against, you know, these huge, you know, big front court players. But with Boston, you know good and well they're another team that wants to push the pace, shoot a ton of threes, and then crash the glass. Whereas with the Cavs, it's a little bit more almost of a traditional offense, but then you also have to deal with Jared Allen and Evan Mobley.
Yeah.
And
not fun.
Not fun when you're at full health, let alone when you're coming off of an ankle surgery.
Also, in terms of the positive, we've got the Kia rookie ladder that the NBA has decided to make a content item. Good thing they got that sponsored. Do you care to guess who the number one rookie in the Kia rookie ladder is?
I'm going to take a guess, but I'm going to assume I'm wrong. I'm going to guess because it should be VJ Edgecombe.
So I was stunned to see it's not VJ Edgecombe.
Who is it?
It is Con Knipple.
You know what?
Con has obviously had a good year.
Right,
but
I'm not super mad at that. He's been really good. Like I can't be that upset at that, but Edgecombe has been
a freak. There's also a question of, should we give more credit to a guy who's producing on a better team? Like VJ's producing on a good team right now.
Sure.
Whereas Con is getting a lot of opportunity.
He's getting a ton of run. Yeah.
Lot of opportunity. Here is what NBA.com Steve Ashburner had to say. Knipple has led the Hornets on various nights in scoring, rebounding, assists, and steals. He has two double-doubles strung together, four games with 20 points or more, including 30 against Miami, then followed up with a near triple-double Monday against the Lakers, 19-10-9. Then there is the stuff that is more nuanced, in which he includes a couple of highlights. Meanwhile, he is learning on the fly and adapting. Number two is indeed Cedric Coward.
Ooh, I like that.
Coward has been a rare and beaming bright spot in a Grizzlies season weighed down by so far by injuries, losing, and other issues. That's putting it mildly.
That's a good way to put it.
He already looks to be a steal offensively, and his uncommon wingspan is grabbing attention on the defensive end, both on the perimeter and even at the rim. Cooper Flagg comes in at 3, VJ Edgecombe at 4, Ryan Kalkbrenner, also of the Hornets, comes in at 5. He includes the next 5, so just missing out. Jeremiah Fears.
He's been good.
Trey Johnson.
Also good.
Derek Queen.
Getting better.
Ace Bailey and Will Richard.
Look, Ace Bailey, if he continues to get more run, he's looking like the real deal out there in Utah. I understand that's another one where he's going to get a lot of run because he's on a bad team.
Well, it feels like early they try to play guys, and then but it's like, yeah, by January he's going to be.
He's going to be really good. The one who's kind of surprising in there, which I thought he had an NBA skill set coming out of college, Plus, if I remember correctly, he played a ton of college ball, was going to be Kalkbrenner.
Yeah, so Ryan, famously, the one of the members of the syndicate referred to him as big for no reason.
yeah, it's fair.
So the problem, though, is this ended up burning us in the syndicate. It was great Kalkbrenner's junior year because Creighton would lay a lot of eggs. It got to burn us last year because Creighton ended up like being a pretty consistent team.
Right.
I feel like he has clearly, I think like he has demonstrated to me, yes, he's going to have physical limitations. It's very similar to Edie, where he's going to have physical limitations, but he has things that he produces on the basketball floor that are meaningful. He is an efficient scorer.
Right.
He is a very good rebounder.
I was going to say, for him, it feels like, and even going back to last year at Creighton, there is always, or last 2 years, I guess I should say, there's always the point where, you know, these guys are young college players. They are kind of just big for no reason. They don't really know how to use their size just yet. But by the end of last year, you're looking at him and thinking, okay, wait, he's clearly growing into his frame, like, in his head. Like, he's realizing, oh, wait a second, if I'm doing this and this under the rim, it's going to go well. And now it's translating to the NBA. It's that growth process that he's going through.
Yeah, and there's also always going to be like, okay, if you have to pull him away from the basket and he has to defend, you know, 17, 18 feet away, like, that's not what you want. Problem is, we're basically talking about the end of games.
Right.
There's other minutes in the game that he is useful.
Very.
And it's always been my issue with Edie. It's like, I somehow get labeled as like an Edie like stan when it's like, no, I just also acknowledge what he provides is what they lack. How many second chance points last night could have been stopped simply if he were in there? I always go back to think about the Warriors play-in game. And there were lots of people that were going nuts about Edie on the defensive end, and I'm sitting there going, I've just watched the only time that the Grizzlies get a stop is if the Warriors miss and he secures the rebound.
Right.
Like, every other time that he wasn't on the floor, they were getting four cracks at it until they could finally score.
I mean, if you want to look at it, we could just look at last night where the Knicks had 10 offensive rebounds that turned into points.
Yeah, let's see.
One of them is the big highlights that's been going around on ESPN
so
today.
The Grizzlies got outscored in transition, or excuse me, off turnovers, 33-11. They also got outscored 3-1 on second chance points, 18-6.
And if we're just going just at the bare minimum offensive rebounds, the Knicks had double, 10-5.
Yep.
Would be nice to have your 7'4" guy in there who could just body up just about anybody on the Knicks.
Of course,
or most teams, pretty much.
That was the other comment that was going around apparently on socials. Ja last night, post game. Jeff had me pull it this morning.
I heard this
when Ja was asked by Michael Wallace about the turnovers. He's like, you know, obviously on some of these I got to make better passes. I got to be better with the ball.
Right.
I got to be smarter going into the lane, and then some other ones. You know. And I'm gonna take up for Ja here. We do know.
Buddy,
and
we have eyes.
I do know. And this is where I have felt like some of what he is upset about, I think, is legitimate.
Right.
Last night is one of those nights where I'm like, that is an appropriate way to deal with it.
Absolutely. Like, I mean, he had his 7 turnovers, and that ended up being a huge point in the game because he is the Grizzlies' primary ball handler. He played the most minutes. He's going to take the ball up and down the floor almost every time he's out there. He also had 10 assists. It's not like these are only going one direction. It's not like they're not turning into positive opportunities for his teammates.
No, I guess this is the larger question that I have, which is how much blame should Ja and Jaren get? Because on the one hand, I do agree with Ja. Look around.
Yeah.
That's not a fair fight. But the other part of it is, this is where two guys making $90 million plus, this is what the money's for. Like, when you're shorthanded,
you're supposed to be able to uplift the guys around you in a way.
But I guess when I'm watching it, it's like, okay,
they're not doing him any, like, those two any favors either. Like, sure, and one of the things, like, with Jaren also had 5 turnovers, and I was wrong, Ja had 8. But a lot of these turnovers ended up being either steals or blocked shots on Jaren, and we even saw this going back to last game on Sunday, and even further back. A lot of what Jaren is really good at when it comes to his offensive game is being able to body people down and get the ball in isolation.
Yeah.
It's really tough for him when he's getting the ball in, quote, isolation. Oh, all of a sudden you've got the guy who's D'ing him up. Oh, and now there's someone on his hip as well, because they can just condense because there's no real three-point shooting threat.
Well, and most teams have started adopting what the Thunder.
The Caruso effect.
Put a smaller guy on him, and Jaren, like, everyone will sit there and go, back him down. And then Jaren winds up in a situation where it's like, he's afraid if he backs him down, he's going to get called for an offensive foul. There was one last night that was shocking. Like, I was absolutely shocked they didn't call him for a charge. But, like, I understand the apprehension. I guess the other part of it that I see is so much of, like, I can understand in a vacuum thinking, this is why you get paid. This is when you got to step up. When your team's shorthanded, that's what we need you for. That's what we're paying you for.
Right.
I also recognize when they're on the floor, you don't really have to honor a lot else out there.
No, absolutely. I mean, especially when the other guys on the team have gotten off to these shooting slumps that they have.
Yeah.
Jalen Wells appears to be breaking out of that. This is 2 straight games where he's had a pretty good shooting performance.
I think the other encouraging things last night, Wells is starting to appears to be coming out of a slump.
Right.
I like what I'm starting to see. It's like I have all my Vince Williams stock, because I probably
Vince has been good
because it couldn't unload it. I do think Santi's been pretty good after, like, the first 2 games. I didn't love it, but I think Santi is. I think when they started bumping Santi back and, like, having him more in the second unit,
right?
I think that's been better. And then, I mean, to me, like, the other aspect of it is, I do like that Tuomas, throughout the course of a game, when he senses something's not working, he rips the Band-Aid off.
He pulls the plug pretty quickly. I mean, to that point, KCP only played 15 minutes. Now, you and I talked about this morning.
Yeah.
And I've talked with DeMichael a little bit about this. It's not like a crazy thing, but I think it's pretty clear right now KCP is laboring with something. Like, I don't know exactly what. He's not on the injury report, but just, this is a mannerisms, and usually you're not grimacing or grabbing at a body part when you're not hurting somehow, some way.
I think it could also explain some of the quick triggers, because it might be a pain tolerance thing, and you can recognize on a night, like, all right, he can't deal with it. Like,
sure.
Like, that would also make some sense to me.
Absolutely.
I mean, the other aspect of it is like, okay, how much, like, Cam seems to give you a lift in terms of guy that can score. And while he's a willing defender, I still don't know if he's a good defender.
No, he's not.
You know what I mean?
No, I know, like, exactly what you mean.
He does, like, the effort things where it's, yes, like, he stays in front, whatnot, but, like, you can shoot over the top of him. And as someone that has had a lot of shots over the top of him, like, I know what that's like.
No, I mean, and that's my big thing with some of these guys, specifically like Cam, and you could even say, you know, at time, well, not with Vince, because he just hits people. sometimes with Conchar, too.
Yeah, I respect
too.
That.
Oh, no, absolutely. I love it. Just bodying people up. Cam is purely an effort guy. Like, he is just a spark plug. He's going to go out there and give you as much energy as he has in those, you know, whatever minutes on the floor he gets. And in a way, that's kind of what Isolo is looking for, isn't it?
I think so. I mean, I think at a lot of times, like, at least that's more than what other people have been giving you.
Right.
And so, I mean, I do think that this is kind of where we just have to accept this is navigating it right now. The schedule's brutal, but try to get guys back. Try to stay healthy yourself. You got to manage this. The idea is not to be, you know, a top 3 or 4 seed. My whole goal is they're still very much, like, as bad as it feels, like, they're still inside the top 10. And if you start looking at teams that we think could move up, move down, there's enough movement where you can sit there and go, they can stay inside the top 10. And then as the season goes on, you start to figure out what combinations work the best. You get guys back healthy. I still don't know what to make of the Brandon Clark update. I mean, I guess like to the All-Star break, is that what we're thinking?
That's what it sounds like. And this sounds in a way so defeatist. And it feels like the way I feel about BC right now with his knee, it is a similar way that we end up talking about these guys that have these calf injuries. At this point, his knee just feels like another ticking time bomb with him.
No, I feel like the way that I think about it is anything you get from Brandon at this point is positive.
Because yeah, I mean, you're playing with house money.
I you know what I mean? Like when I saw he did the platelets thing, like when you get
the injection,
when you go to Europe and that's your answer, I'm like, oh boy.
It's coming.
Oh, boy. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, the Memphis women's soccer team has re-entered into the NCAA tournament. Lawrence Dockery is going to join the program next. He's of the 901 Soccer Podcast. He'll talk about it with us when we come back right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Lawrence Dockery is the host of the 901 Soccer Podcast for Bluff City Media. He also writes for Beyond the 90. Go subscribe to that Substack now. Follow him on the Everything app at LDoc93. All right, Lawrence, take me through the process. How sweaty was it going to be on Selection Monday for the Lady Tigers, since the fact that they come from what would, I would think, be considered a one-bid league, and the fact that they didn't win the outright conference championship, or the conference tournament, I should say?
Yeah, so it wasn't going to be sweaty in terms of making or missing the NCAA tournament. I understand. I know Coach Monaghan said kind of in the immediate aftermath of that you know, he was a little bit scarred from last year because they were a top 25 team the entire season. They went 13-2-4. One of their losses was on the road at Tennessee, who went 9-8 and got into the NCAA tournament. So, like, last year was completely asinine because, hey, you're a good enough team to count as a good win for Tennessee, but you're not a good enough team to be in the tournament, which makes no sense. But it wasn't sweaty in terms of them making or missing the tournament. It was sweaty in, are they going to host an NCAA tournament game, or are they going to have to go on the road? Which, again, brings us back to asinine, because 16-0-3 with non-conference wins over Ole Miss, Missouri, one seed Vanderbilt, and a draw with three seed Tennessee. Nobody beat them in regulation the entire season, and we're sitting having to sweat, man, are they going to get to host a tournament game, or are they going to have to go on the road? So from that perspective, I guess it's good that they did get to host an NCAA tournament game. Probably egregiously much lower seeded than they need to be. I think going into the conference tournament, the expectation was they were going to be somewhere around 3 or 4. And even after they lost that semifinal on penalties to UTSA, who ended up winning the conference tournament and making the NCAA tournament, I was thinking they still probably could have and should have been somewhere between 5 and 3. So 7, I think, was lower than what I thought they should have been.
Can you explain, like, normally if I go and look at the AP poll and then I look at the top 16 seeds when we'll see the NCAA tournament selection for the college basketball, like, you can see a lot of overlap. When you look at what is considered the poll for women's soccer, which is the United Soccer Coaches Women's Poll, and then you look at the tournament seeds, it feels like there's not a lot of overlap. What is the disconnect there?
So a lot of it is just, I believe as far as selecting the tournament field and seeding the teams, a lot of it is RPI based. And I think Memphis's RPI was somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 to 20. So that could explain the disconnect. You've also got a different soccer poll. So you mentioned the United Soccer Coaches poll. There's also the Top Drawer Soccer poll. And I think mostly identical, give or take. So that might explain the disconnect. But, you know, we like to refer to the selection committee because, you talk about having football brain all the time. And I think, with this being a 64-team tournament, much like the basketball tournament, we get basketball brain and think selection committee.
Yeah.
I don't know that I have a good answer if there is actually like a real selection committee or if they just plug all this information into a computer or if there's just one dude at NCAA headquarters that goes, here it is, go with it. Because it's soccer and it's not highly scrutinized as basketball or football. So I think that maybe can open the door a little bit to maybe a little bit less transparency. Although I don't know, does opening a door and transparency counteract each other? I don't know.
That's a fair point.
But yeah. So
I guess you can be transparent by opening your door. I do know that this is true. Like baseball still has kind of a selection committee in the sense of like it's more similar than what you would think about with basketball. But I know with a lot of these championships, they basically just take the numbers and that's kind of how they seed it. And now that you've pointed me out and I've went and found the RPI rankings from NCAA.com, it's like, okay, well that looks like how they seeded it.
Well, you also have to, and I think, the college football playoff rankings, everybody likes to go crazy when that first one comes out the first week of November. And not too long ago, here's our top 16 overall seeds for the postseason in women's soccer. And Memphis was number 14 in that, which would put you theoretically as a 4 seed. And they continued to not lose any games. And with the exception of that UTSA game, nobody was really even close to them. So dramatically between, 3 weeks ago and Monday.
How good of a season did they have? Because, like, as you said, when you look at 16-0-3, I think, because as you point out, when you lose in PKs, it goes down as a draw. Feels like we've got some NBA statistical. If you win, it counts as a win, but if you lose in PKs, we put it over to a draw. But the fact that this seems to have been one of the most successful campaigns, does it really stack up as someone who knows about the history of the program?
Yeah, it's the big topic coming into the season was this. Brooks Monaghan's been here a quarter century. He's been this is his 26th season as the coach. And this is the youngest team he's ever had. It hasn't been close. They've got one senior, two juniors, and everybody else is freshmen or sophomores. And so, you know what the history of the program is. So it's a very high standard. This is, I think, going to be their 13th NCAA tournament appearance, 4th in the last 5 years, 8 in the last 10. You had obviously back-to-back Sweet 16 appearances in 2022 and 2023. And, you went unbeaten. That doesn't happen very often. So this has been one of the best seasons in the history of the program. Now, I think like basketball, you are going to be judged kind of what you do in the tournament. I think if you can beat Illinois on Saturday night and end up going on the road to Fort Worth to face 2-seed TCU, whatever happens there happens. And I think as long as you can get past Illinois on Saturday, I think this will stack up as probably one of the 3 or 4 best seasons in the history of the program.
Obviously, with it being an incredibly limited sample size, is there any concern that the last 2 years the Tigers have gotten into situations against lesser opponents in a tournament situation and haven't won?
Their last couple of NCAA tournament appearances, in 2022, they went on the road. Well, let's back it up to 2021, the first post-COVID year, because I'll use the stats from COVID and that they made the NCAA tournament to kind of burnish the trophy case a little bit.
Yeah.
But, COVID year in all sports is just a little bit wonky, weird stuff happened everywhere.
Yes.
2021, they hosted an NCAA tournament game. They beat LSU in front of like 1,200 people, I want to say, 1,300 people out at the track and soccer complex. Then they went on the road to Duke and lost, and there's no shame in that. 2022, they went on the road to St. Louis in the first round, beat them, went to a neutral site for the second round against Mississippi State, beat them 4-0, then lost at Arkansas in the Sweet 16 on penalty. So no shame there. 2023, they hosted LSU in the first round of the NCAA tournament, drew over 2,000 people for that game, beat them, went to a neutral site, beat Notre Dame, who was a top 10 team in the country, and lost to a top 25 Pitt team at a neutral site. So, like, when they, the last three times they've made the NCAA tournament, they have had very good showings. You look at Illinois, and, you know, they've got a decent record. They were 13-5-2 this year. They don't have any just massive wins that jump off the chart. They did beat a ranked Penn State team 4-3 at home. That sounds like it was a kind of a barn burner, but you look at it, they're kind of backing into the postseason.
Yeah.
They're winless in four of their last five games coming Saturday. They lost at Northwestern. They got their heads taken off by Michigan State 5-1, got a draw at Michigan. They won the first round in the Big Ten tournament, but then they lost to Washington in the second round pretty comprehensively. So, Memphis is at home. They're the higher seed. I would make them the favorite, but they are going to need to play their best game. And at their best, I think this Memphis team can beat anybody.
Oftentimes we see in kind of the non-revenue sports, it's very difficult for, you know, G6 schools, mid-majors, to actually still compete. Like, if you go and you look at, you know, when we look across the board in almost all non-revenue sports, like, you can see, like, okay, the schools that have the most money are the ones that are able to compete. What does it say that Memphis consistently has been able to compete in this sport?
You know, I've thought about that, and I like to make the comparison. One thing to that point is, when you look at really the history of the NCAA women's soccer tournament, it's the brackets are usually pretty chalky.
Yep.
I think the first women's soccer tournament in the NCAAs was 1982, and I think there's only been 10 different teams that have won it. North Carolina has 22 of those titles.
You see a lot of North Carolina, a lot of Florida State, a lot of Stanford.
Yeah, they
a lot of Notre Dame.
State, I think heading into last year, Florida State had won 4 of the last 10. Notre Dame's won 3 of them. Funnily enough, I think the SEC has only ever appeared in the title game once. But
it just means less.
I like to make the comparison. When I'm talking about Memphis women's basketball, I think the perfect comparison for them is Gonzaga basketball. Gonzaga doesn't have a football program, obviously, at the highest level. You know, Memphis football for the longest time was a nothing burger. And, you know, everybody always thought, hey, Mark Few is going to be the next guy at all of these different jobs, and then he just didn't. And I have to imagine, as successful as Brooks has been, that people have inquired, and, you know, he's been here for 26 years. You also look at the fact that for the longest time, Gonzaga was kind of like a Cinderella on the outside looking in, and it just got to a point where they won enough that they got the benefit of the doubt when it came to seeding. And then there was a stretch for about a decade where they crashed out in the first round every year before going, I think in 2015, they made an Elite Eight run and then went to the second weekend for like 11 straight years until last year. And I think that is what Memphis women's soccer is and can be. And I think that's the perfect comparison there is Gonzaga basketball, just because, you know, they're not from an elite soccer conference the way that Gonzaga basketball is not from an elite basketball conference. And they are the flag waver carrier in that conference. And I can tell you what, for, you know, even before Gonzaga turned into somebody that you always have to take seriously, there was a point in time where you didn't want to play Gonzaga. And that's where Memphis is. I mean, you know, you can be a power conference team and look down at the American, but I guarantee you there's not anybody out there that looks at Memphis and goes, oh, good, that's who we want to play.
We're wrapping up here with Lawrence Dockery again. The 901 Soccer Podcast is his podcast. Also, subscribe to the Substack Beyond the 90. Is it better to be underseeded, or would you rather have the higher seed? Like, when you look at it like this, the fact that a lot of people would say, like, this is a better team than a 7 seed, like, sometimes that can work out better for you, but How would you kind of size it up in as we look at the bracket?
Well, you know, that's a point that I had not considered. You think, I guess when you talk about egregiously underseeded teams that it worked out well for, I think you can go back to the 2014 Kentucky Wildcat basketball team with the Harrison twins. That was a 9
still, it's still one of my favorite Cal spin zones of all time. When you underseed,
I was such an elite talker.
When you underseed us, it doesn't bother me. It hurts the field. You know, don't feel bad for me. It's just an all-timer.
But I think in this case, you want to be, especially like I said, this tournament can get pretty chalky sometimes because the gap between the ACC teams, which are the haves, and then everybody, you know, a couple of the West Coast Big Ten teams, which is ridiculous to say, that, you know, the gap between the haves and have-nots is pretty big. So you want as easy of a path to as far deep in the tournament as possible, and getting a higher seed is the best way to do that. Now, you know, TCU is a 2 seed, so you got to get past Illinois at home on Saturday, and if that doesn't happen, then all of this is moot. But if you can get past Illinois, you play the winner of TCU and Grambling, that's probably going to be TCU. I don't know much about TCU historically, but like I said, Memphis at their best can beat anybody. There's no reason to expect that they couldn't beat TCU, and here's where we get interesting. We know that the basketball committee loves matchups, and they can tell us until they're blue in the face that, no, we don't do it that way, but we just had Patino v. Calipari in the second round of the NCAA.
We had Texas A&M set up. Yeah, come on.
Yes. If Memphis were to make it to the Sweet 16, they could possibly have a rematch with UTSA, who put them out of the conference tournament. They could also possibly have a rematch with Tennessee, who they got a draw earlier this year. The third one, and I think, quite frankly, this is the most likely team to end up in the Sweet 16 out of that little pod down there, is North Carolina. And that would be probably the biggest. If Memphis played North Carolina in the Sweet 16 for a berth in the Elite Eight, that would without a doubt be the biggest game in the history of the program, because that is the biggest brand in women's college soccer. Also, a former North Carolina soccer player who is from Memphis is also currently the head of U.S. soccer, and Cindy Parlow-Cone. So
also a student of my mother. There.
Really? Yeah. How about that?
Yeah. My mom taught her at Germantown Elementary.
But I got to get past Illinois on Saturday. And it's fun to think about what could be in the Sweet 16, but you got to take care of your business. But this Memphis team at their best can beat anybody, and I think they can beat Illinois. If they get bad away, I think they can beat TCU, which would set up an incredible game in the Sweet 16 with three potential incredible storylines.
Lawrence, we really appreciate the preview, my man.
Yep, thanks for having me.
Lawrence Dockery of the 901 Soccer Podcast. We come back, we tell your story. Terry Bradshaw had a doozy. Can't wait to share it with you next, right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, George, for today's Don't Tell These Story, tell your story. Terry Bradshaw with an absolute doozy. People always say Tom Brady's the greatest quarterback to ever play. Okay. Is he really? Otto Graham might be the greatest quarterback to ever play. How many titles did Otto win? 10? Look it up. And Tom lost 3. I was 4-0. Montana was 4-0. Brady was 7-3. 7 minus 3 is 4. 4-4-4. That's how I look at it. For the record, I also looked it up. While it's multiple different leagues, Otto Graham was 7-3 also. So is it now 4-4-4-4?
4.
I do like the idea.
4-by-4.
I do like
16.
I like losing a Super Bowl counts as taking one away.
Even though you still,
right, even though you already won it.
Yeah, like you won the.
Yeah.
Still won the other one.
Yeah. Listen, the difference is 4. That's 4 minus 0 is 4.
That's some Steiner math right there.
There we go. That is some damn fine Steiner math. Want to thank Lawrence Dockery and Coach Hurd for joining the program. If you missed anything, it'll be up on the podcast shortly after the program ends. For George, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show's coming up next.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply. In-app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.